Hi, everyone. Welcome to Potluck Food Talks. I'm here with Sleepy Boy Walter. So for people who don't know why I always put like these funny names on Phil, it's because that's a nickname he puts on the chat platform. Pill Pill Walt, Sleepy Boy, Gorilla Dick.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, at one point I was filling out a form, like an official form on my laptop, with somebody else sitting next to me looking at it, and I clicked the like name section of my name, and for some reason this website decided to take all the nicknames that I put into Riverside, the program we use for recording, as suggestions. So it was like Big Schlong Man, Gorilla Dick, blah, and this person, she was like, what the hell, where are all these names coming from?
That's really funny. So today we're going to talk about a very dynamic topic, I would say, veganism.
Veganism.
Everybody has an opinion on veganism, I guess.
Well, especially vegans. Yeah.
Also not vegans, I guess. Oof. I remember the first time I heard about veganism, I was working at, the first time I took it kind of like from a chef's perspective seriously, I was at culinary school, and one of my co-students, he was working in a catering for top artists that would go to Venezuela for performances, concerts, for shows. And one of these was U2 Pop, you know, like U2. They're all vegans to the point of I remember that they would explain me like even the clothes, and I was like, what is this? What kind of sect is this? And back then I would take it as such, as a kind of like a sect or something strange. Now for me, it's just like a, you know, like a diet profile that needs to be taken into account. And I guess like most restaurants have to operate in that way, having like a, at least something in mind. And I think as a trained chef, it comes to a point where you already know how to deal with it. You already know how to automatically filter. This is it. This is not, you know, like, and what to deliver. So what do you have to say about veganism?
I don't know. You know, I feel like obviously vegans get a lot of slack. They get a lot of shit. I feel like, especially with like toxic kitchen culture, you know, everybody used to hate on vegetarians. And now that's not really a thing anymore. I think like vegetarians are like very widely accepted. They're sort of like, oh, this person's vegetarian. I think very few chefs are going to go, oh, the vegetarians. But when a vegan comes, it's a little bit different because it's kind of like, yeah, vegan.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Even, I mean, for me, even as a, I mean, of course I have vegan friends, but it is really a fact that you have to put them in a category aside. You know, like when you're, for example, when I give food tours, I can deal with vegetarians, no problem. But vegans, it's like, okay, you're going to eat patatas bravas and Guernica peppers the whole tour, you know, because that's all there is. It's really a problem. For example, in Basque cuisine and in other cuisines that have such traditions of eating fish and meat, and I mean, and also dairies. I remember I was with Sustainable Papi. What's the name of this guy? Henry Obispo. He has like this amazing project in the Bronx, like a vertical farming project to reconvert urban areas that have been neglected in terms of nutrition. These things are known as food deserts, and this is systematically like kind of like a food apartheid for especially Black communities in the States, and he leads this project.
Oh, wow.
Well, he's vegan, and he was visiting me in San Sebastian, so I was taking him on a tour. And that's actually, and I mean, and a tour as a friend. So it was really problematic because I would ask like, can I get the scallop with almond soup without the scallop? And they're like, fuck you. No, you know, like,
yeah.
Or then I was in this place that, what do you have vegan? And it was like a spinach croquette. And I, great. Oh, wait, but that has butter and milk. And they were like, come on, but these people, they can't like just be like normal. Of course it has butter. So you get to see that a lot, like in very normal places, you know, like this kind of attitudes, you know. I guess it's more like in a more professional level that you will see people just not caring and just dealing with it and solving the situation, you know.
Because that's what a chef does, is a problem solver, no? Like a chef is a problem solver, in my opinion.
Yeah.
For a very large part. I mean, we've talked about this a lot of times, you know, that you have to be a professional and you have to, you know, somebody comes in and says, hey, I don't eat. I don't know, you know, I have a very, very strong, deadly, deadly allergy against dry yeast and, you know, garlic, but raw garlic is fine and blah, you know, some bullshit. And of course it's bullshit. And it's, not to say that I think it's totally okay to draw the line as a restaurant worker and say, I'm very sorry, but if that's the way, then either please contact us beforehand or go somewhere else. But you find a solution, right? And like, I mean, this mentality is very, very old school. I love this sort of fact that it's kind of like a spinach croquette. It has eggs and milk in it, but also it's, you know, rebozado in like eggs, you know? So,
and butter for the bechamel. I mean, yeah. It's non-vegan everywhere. And they're
at
like,
all,
no,
at all.
But these people, can they just like deal with it? You know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, it's really difficult when you have a country that is, that has such a strong culinary tradition, right? Like, for example, I had this example a lot of times talking about vegetarianism, as in true, like real vegetarianism and especially veganism. And people are sort of like, yeah, in Asia, it's like, it must be so much nicer. And I'm kind of like, what are you talking about? I like, try to eat fully vegetarian in Japan, depending where you are, right? Like, but like in Osaka and Tokyo and stuff, good luck. Vegan, almost impossible, I think, you know, because even if you get like a vegetarian miso soup, it's made with dashi, you know, dashi's made with katsubushi, that's bonito, that's fish. Right. It's tough.
In Japan, you have this, I would call it food genre, shojin. I guess I'm pronouncing it wrong. But it's this tradition, this school of Zen Buddhism, cluster cooking that, is of course vegan because they're Buddhists. And that's actually very interesting. I booked a restaurant in Kyoto. For my trip to Japan, we're going to talk about that on the next episode. This is a Michelin starred place that is a Buddhist cluster, and it's super cheap. It costs like 60 euros the menu.
Nice.
And it's vegan, and it's I think that approach to veganism. It's not that I'm saying that modern approaches to veganism. I in general I. find veganism to be interesting, but this school of a Buddhist monk of clusters, I know Eric Ripert has traveled to these monasteries to learn about this. And just recently, Shinobu Namae published a book with I think it's American journalist focused only on monastery cooking, and he goes to these monasteries to look for inspiration. And that's something also that I've seen in Japanese chefs, that they have somehow this connection with this kind of chef that are monks and chefs, because there is like somehow like a monastic aspect to being a chef, you know? And I think that there are parallelisms that can work as an inspiration to each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There is definitely something very monk-like in cooking. Also just like this outpour of yourself in your dedication and your repetition of your craft. And, it's something that is like, it can be, you know, without having like using a term that's very overblown, but it's something that can be very spiritual in your pursuit of making something better. And I also always found it fascinating, you know, and like, yeah, like, I mean, this is the thing with this whole subject, right? It's like, there's so many branches of it, and there's, you know, the religious aspects of why people are vegan. There's a health focused aspect. It's just like a general anti-cruelty preference, which again is a whole different subject. Then there's obviously just the people who follow a certain trend, because that is a certain stance is viewed in a certain way at a certain time in the current zeitgeist. And then there's the sustainability aspect, which for me is one of the biggest discussion points, right? Because you meet a lot of people who say, yeah, I am a vegan. I choose to be a vegan because eating meat is bad for the planet. And then you kind of go like, well, what do you eat if you don't eat meat? You know, that's also a big question. What kind of a vegan are you, right? Are you a vegetable seasonal focused vegan, or are you I eat chicken that's pressed out of soy compounds kind of vegan, right? And that is a big difference, because like, I have actually a lot of sympathy and a lot of respect for the first kind, the kind that eats plants and vegetables throughout the year. That for me is like how I feel, you know, like a monastery would cook, right? Preserve, ferment, find ways around normal meat components. But the person that eats like roast beef and chicken that's made out of a million emulsification ingredients and chemicals and flavor enhancers and soy products and byproducts of it, it's kind of like, don't tell me that it's A, healthy, and B, sustainable and good for the planet, because I'm not buying that.
Yeah, you also can find those kinds of things that are sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
You get both. Like when we talk about alternative proteins, which is like a huge topic in food tech nowadays, you get both. You get like the cheap crap that is vegan. Vegan is not necessarily healthy. It's not one thing has nothing to do with the other. I mean, you could eat like pure sugar, and that would be vegan, you know. And you also have like proper, nice, sustainable, not only traditional products like tofu, but also Hira comes to mind, which is a startup from here, from Barcelona. I'm in Barcelona right now, that has scaled up all over Europe, and they do this thing, this product that looks like, I will say chicken, because it has like this texture that feels like chicken. And I've done this a couple of times, that I give it to taste to professional chefs, like, and ask them, what do you think it is? And I've heard everything. I've heard beef, I've heard lamb, duck, chicken, whatever. But nobody said vegan protein. Everybody thought it was like an animal protein. Just nobody could really know what it was. And I think like an interesting product to take into account when cooking vegan is all, and this is like a whole universe of ingredients, it's everything around yeasts.
Yes.
You know, you can develop yeast, like in many cases the flavor of chicken, roasted chicken, beef, meat, those kind of things, is created with yeasts, right? Like yeasts that are designed and developed just to have that specific aroma. And you can play around with that. It's, as a fun fact, next time you are like in one of these big markets, big supplier markets like Macro, Metro, and you see like their instant bouillons, like the beef bouillon, go through the ingredients, and most of the time you won't find meat. Okay. Yeah. Like if you see this
yeast extract, yeah.
Yeast extract, exactly.
Yeah.
You see like the whole, because it's cheaper. And I mean, they say like a bouillon with beef taste, but it doesn't say
beef.
Yeah, and it's funny because the beef bouillons that you find powdered are many times vegan, you know, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's really funny. That's like, I think yeast is a super interesting ingredient. And I actually, even though I'm not a vegan chef, I use yeast as a flavor enhancer a lot. I have this thing that I make where I take some fresh yeast and I confit it in butter really, really slowly. And it's a very interesting process because it goes for like different phases. The yeast like melts, then suddenly it gets really sticky all of a sudden. And you cook it and cook it and cook it. You cook all the liquid out. And then it just kind of slowly disappear. Like it slowly gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it's almost like sand. And then it starts to toast, to brown. And that's when you want to stop it. And it has this insane flavor that's kind of like, you salt it. It has this flavor that's in between like a really dark roasted Danish rye bread and like crispy chicken skin. Super delicious. I used it for like glazing meat. I used to mix it into like whipped butter to go with like the bread. It was super nice. But this is like a whole different subject, right? A topic, because a lot of people that I also come across in my restaurant will say, I am vegan. Hence, I don't eat yeast, because yeast is a living culture, right? It's a culture of bacteria, and I don't want to eat anything that's made with yeast. Have you come across this, or?
No. I think if you put that filter, then you can't eat anything.
Yeah, that's right? Exactly what I think also. It's like,
for example, mushrooms and the whole world of mushrooms. I know this, one of these companies that develops alternative proteins made of mushrooms, their slogan is half plant, half animal, or something like that. I don't remember exactly, because mushrooms are kind of like animals, you know, like, so that then you couldn't eat mushrooms theoretically, you know, like if you put that filter, what are you saying, that plants don't feel? There is scientific evidence that plants also feel, you know, like, and I guess that's very, I mean, like I don't want to get into these kind of things, like trying to scientifically prove a belief wrong, because that's nonsense, you know, like exactly, like, I don't know, for example, also with Muslims, when I've told them, yeah, but the wine is cooked. If it's cooked, it has no alcohol. And they go like, no, but even so, I can have it. I mean, there is nothing to discuss against that. It's just a, you know, like it's a belief and you have to respect it and that's it. But yeah, going back to yeast, I tried like an amazing dish once cooked by John Regefalk, but it was a dish from Nico Romito, who's a super Italian chef. And this was really interesting. He just, like fresh yeast, just thrown into the oven to roast it. So you have like roasted fresh yeast. I mean, not fresh anymore. It was like roast. And this was kind of like a vegan Parmesan. Super interesting. And he would put that just on spaghetti. That was it. Like instead of Parmesan cheese. And also like I work in a vegan, and also we also had like a raw vegan menu. This restaurant was led by Jean-Christian Jury, who is the author of Phaidon Cookbook on Veganism. I did that because I was always interested in veganism, and I also like contemplated the idea of becoming vegan, but that never worked out for me. I actually gained a lot of weight while working there because I would eat like a lot of dried fruits, and I don't know, like I wasn't doing it okay. That's also like a big topic about becoming vegan or being vegan or vegetarian, that you shouldn't do that as you feel, you know, like I have a friend who became vegan, and after, I have many stories of people that were going vegan went wrong. Like, I have a friend that can't have babies because she became raw vegan very young and she destroyed her reproductive system. That's something that can happen. I have another friend who what happened to her? Well, after a couple of years being vegan, she went to the doctor and they said like she wasn't taking, I don't know what kind of pill or vitamin that you should take and that all vegetarians take. That is something that comes with, I think, with fish, or I have no idea. But she wasn't having that. And she, when she saw the, when they saw the index of, I don't know, like the, you should have, like a normal person looks like this and you're in zero, you know, like your amount of this kind of nutrient. And she also had like permanent damages for doing it like that way. I mean, you are what you eat, so you should take serious what you eat and what you're not eating because you're not having it. It's not just like, I decide I'll eat tomatoes only every day and that should work out. It's just not like that. So in this place, it was a restaurant in Berlin called La Mano Verde. They, for example, I learned many of the tricks that vegans do for many things. For example, Parmesan is usually this cheese extract with roasted. In that case, we used pine nuts. So you have like this powder of yeast and pine nuts. Like I said, if you go to industrial companies like Hella or Unilever, these guys have extract yeast of whatever you can imagine of, like all kinds of flavors, super interesting. We would also do like for the raw menu, like raw lasagnas with all slices of vegetables, marinated, fermented, dried fruits, made puree. It was quite interesting. It was pretty nice. There were many delicious things. I remember developing a dessert that I still do sometimes. That is just mixing silken tofu with chocolate, like just molten chocolate. Mm. And you just blitz it, and you have like this kind of pudding. You know, it's like a 2-ingredient, 3-step dessert.
That's quite cool, actually.
Yeah, like I developed that myself. I came to that conclusion, but then I found out that other people have also come to that conclusion because it's like a very common tenant thing. I've seen people like also, but nobody taught me that. I just, because we were making like other desserts like that, like also like with fruits to make like a crème brûlée, vegan, these kind of things. And what else? Yeah, also chocolate. Biscuits using emulsifying oil. That's also interesting. You make kind of like a mayonnaise, and then you like a mayonnaise, let's say, with using soy milk instead of egg, and you have like this emulsion, and then you pour flour into it, and then you have like a vegan biscuit. Okay, or also whisking aquafaba. For me, that's a crazy thing. Taking the water.
Crazy, yeah.
Taking the water of the chickpeas and just whipping it until you have a foam. That's also super interesting. You have any favorite vegan dishes that you can think of?
I'm trying to think, honestly. Like, I have... I've seen, like, things done, especially with, like, aquafaba and stuff like that, where I was like, man, this is really cool. And it's, like, a really great dish. Recently, like, I don't cook like that, you know, like I am an advocate for good farming practices and for good quality dairy products. Like I am for that. I don't want to support the big meat industry and stuff like that, but I am an advocate for good farming practices and the resulting product. So I don't spend enough time really like with these sorts of things. But in the last years, I have seen like a few like small, even like very simple things. They're not even very tricksy. Like 2 years ago, I ate a very extremely delicious potato puree made with slightly smoked margarine and cold pressed rapeseed oil and oat milk. Yeah. And it was very, very tasty, and it was completely vegan, and it had everything that you wanted. Good potatoes, little bit of fattiness, this like very beautiful nutty flavor from the rapeseed oil, from the canola oil. And canola, when you hear canola oil, you always think of the like just box standard, really shitty cooking oil. Well, shitty, I mean, just very, like very, very desodorized, etc., right? But if you can get very high quality cold pressed, intensely golden, nutty canola oils, and they're delicious, and a slight smokiness, super nice.
Yeah, especially in German countries, there are like super high quality canola oils. Yeah,
and linseed oil and stuff like that. It's very, very traditional here.
Yeah, we would use a lot of that stuff in the vegan restaurant I work.
But I like there's some sort of things that I've adapted for myself. Also, there's this like, I have this like new rice pudding recipe where for me, rice pudding, like when I make it at home, I make it classic. I mean, milk, you know, et cetera. I make it very simple. Arroz con leche, so to say. But now, like, for example, I wanted to develop this like recipe for having like a little jar, like a vec jar of rice pudding layered with jam that you can have on the breakfast buffet, right? Like cold. And when I'm thinking about making that, I'm like, well, it would be great to make it vegan so that just everybody can have it, right?
Yeah. And I think it's a good like design challenge to make a rice pudding with, because you have rice milk. You can also have like roasted rice, like the ones you use for tea. You can do many things around, play around. Like you can use these kinds of oil you were talking about just to give it more fattiness. I think, that's something cool to develop.
No, absolutely. And so like instead of making it with milk, like you make it with a little bit of, you know, coconut milk, but like you don't want it to be too Asian. So you can buy this really nice like rice drink. It's cold. It's basically just like soaked rice, kind of like a horchata, soaked rice, blitzed, passed through. And that gives you a sort of creamy starchiness. And it works really well, you know. And I think that as much as people hate on veganism, or like professional chefs like to hate on veganism, what I really appreciate is the fact that like the other day we talked about Nouvelle Cuisine, right? And I still see myself, even though I was not part of that movement necessarily, I see myself striving for the same things. I want my food to get lighter, to be healthy. And a lot of techniques come out of the vegan movement that I adapt in my non-vegan cooking to achieve exactly that, to achieve a lighter, more digestible, healthier, less fatty, and more balanced approach, you know, a more sort of biodiverse approach to my cooking. And I think that's really nice.
One of the dishes I think I can think of that is maybe one of the best vegan dishes I've had is from Marcia Taha from Bolivia. She got recently named like from San Pellegrino's Latin America 50 best female chef in Latin America. And she had this dish where she would use Brazilian nuts. She would make like a milk with that.
But not in November.
Not in November. Why?
No nuts in November.
Amazonian nuts. I don't know. I have no idea about the seasonality of those ones.
Okay.
Well, what's the joke with no nuts in November? Is that a song? Is that a... Sorry, I don't get it.
No nut November? No?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So, as I was saying.
Yes.
Which, by the way, it's also like a controversial topic that this nut is called Brazilian nut, while the biggest producer is Bolivia. So Bolivians are actually fighting to change the name to Amazonian nut or Bolivian nut. Even Amazonian should be okay. They call it chestnuts, like forest chestnut. That's how they call it in Bolivia. In any case... she would make like a super nice thick milk with this, and then like something that looked like caviar, but it was amaranth cooked in acai. You know acai?
Oh yeah. This, okay.
Yeah, like super complex flavors. But actually, I tried to do this in Europe with ingredients available here. So you would find this acai puree like in Ecuadorian phone centers and amaranth and bio markets and so on, and doing this with the wrong produce and not the same quality, not the same aromatic profile, it was crap, honestly. But the one she did, it was really, really impressive.
really, really nice.
Yeah. And it's like that. It's kind of what we discussed before, you know, often, you know, the limitations that you set yourself, as in sort of like, I'm not going to be using this, I'm not going to be using that, whether it's in Nordic cooking, I'm not going to be using Mediterranean ingredients, or in veganism, I'm not going to be using animal produce and any animal products. I mean, the natural result of that is often more intense and a more focused and a broader creative approach.
Absolutely. I think constraints are crucial for creativity. Like if you want to use creativity as a tool, right, you should have constraints. You should never be like, oh, let's be creative. Let's think about anything. It could be anything in the world. No. You should always narrow it down to a specific goal. For example, like a strategic goal with a specific target of users. And then you can always create around that, for example, right? Or like with, but not like, let's just fantasize about the possibilities of the universe. That, for me, that's not creativity, that's fantasy, which is not the same.
I totally agree, yeah.
That's it for this week's episode of Potluck Food Talks. If you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as Potluck Food Talks. The show airs every Monday.